The rule is simple. When gold doubles, empires fall. And it just happened again. But this isn't just a historical pattern. It's a mathematical certainty. And while most people are going to focus on the chaos that follows, what they're missing is the real story. It's the single greatest transfer of wealth in human history that's now been triggered. Now, the fall of an empire creates more millionaires than its rise, but only for the few who understand the blueprint. And there's a specific mechanism within that blueprint, hidden in plain sight, that determines who gets wiped out and who builds generational wealth. Now, after building and selling companies for over 25 years and now investing in the next financial system as an officer of a publicly traded company, I can tell you this is the playbook we're using right now. And I'm going to share it all with you. So let's go. All right. Now, we have a lot to cover. So let's just go ahead and just jump right in. But before we get to the blueprint and the plan, we have to jump in the time machine. We got to go back in time so you can see how this is a repeating blueprint and how the mechanism and how the plan is almost always the same. Now let's look real quick. We're going to go back to Rome, Spain, France, Britain, and then we'll stop in the US. And we're starting where this whole pattern really starts, with Rome. Now the backbone of Rome's money was the silver denarius. It was introduced around 211 BC. Now at that time, it was about 95% pure silver, roughly 4.5 grams of actual silver. And it quickly became the trusted money across the empire. And for almost 300 years, Rome kept that coin relatively stable. But of course, governments can never resist the temptation to spend more than they take in. By the time of Emperor Nero, around 60 AD, the silver content that had already been cut down to about 90% under Trajan, it was now about 85%. Commodus dropped it closer to 70%, and by the Severan dynasty in the early 200s, the denarius was now only about 50% silver. And then came the crisis of the 3rd century. It was the real breaking point. By around 250 AD, the denarius now had less than 5% silver left. It was basically now a copper coin with a very thin silver wash around it. Now, of course, the people knew it, right? Soldiers started demanding to be paid in gold instead. Now, historians estimate that prices rose by over 1,000% in just a few decades. One gold aris, which had been worth 25 denarii in the early empire, was now worth thousands of denarii by the late 200s, and eventually millions by the time Constantine tried to reform the system with a new gold coin, the solidus. And here's where the pattern comes in. As for the currency debased, the price of gold, in terms of denarius, it skyrocketed. Gold doubled, and then doubled again. And just like that, Rome's money was worthless and trade broke down. And it wasn't just inflation. It was the total collapse of trust. Cicero even complained that people no longer knew what their money was worth. Caracalla, one of the emperors during this period, literally said, quote, "Nobody should have any money but I, so that I may bestow it upon the soldiers," end quote. Now, of course, that was after he raised the military pay by 50%. Now, that tells you where the empire's priorities were. So, of course, this led to massive political chaos. Between 2035 and 2085 AD, Rome had something like 20 to 26 emperors in just 50 years. And all of them died violently. The empire split apart, trade broke down, taxes skyrocketed, and by the end of the century, barter replaced money in many of the regions because the money had become worthless. Now, the lesson here is very clear. When gold doubled against Rome's money, it wasn't prosperity. It was the market's vote of no confidence. It was the signal that the empire itself was collapsing. And that's the first clear example of this blueprint: currency debasement, gold doubling, and empire collapse. Okay, now after Rome, we see the exact same blueprint repeat again, but this time it's in Spain. Now, here we are in the 1500s. Spain was the superpower of the world at the time. They had colonies stretching across Europe, the Americas, Asia, and most importantly, they had something nobody else had. They had treasure fleets that were pouring in gold and silver from the New World. The Spanish galleons hauled unbelievable amounts of bullion, silver from the mountains of Potosi in Bolivia, gold from Mexico and the Caribbean. Now, at its peak, Spain was importing more than 200 tons of silver a year. Historian Earl Hamilton, who studied the Spanish economy from 1500 to 1650, documented this in great detail. He showed how prices across Spain and Europe exploded right alongside the bullion inflows. All right, that's what we call the price revolution. From about 1500 to 1600, prices in Spain rose about 4 times. Across Europe, prices went up by a factor of 6 over 150 years. The poor, they couldn't keep up. grain, wool, rents, they all skyrocketed. Now, for the average family, it was a complete disaster. It's important to point out here, though, even though they were on a gold and silver standard, when you increase the money supply, inflation, this fast without increasing the production of goods and services, you're going to get massive price increases. Now, also during this period, the crown, it borrowed heavily, especially under Philip II. Now, he waged war after war across Europe, and he funded all this with debt and silver shipments that never seemed to be enough. By 1557, he defaulted on his debts. Then again in 1575, again in 1596, and again in 1607. Four defaults in just 50 years. Now, some scholars estimate that at times, his debts were over 60% of Spain's GDP, which sounds crazy, except when you realize that we're running 100% in the US or over 200% in Japan. But think about that. The richest empire in the world, drowning in debt and unable to pay their bills. Now, of course, when things got really bad, they did what governments always do. They debased the money. So Spain issued copper coins, right? They called them veón, and they repeatedly altered their content. In 1566, they debased the coinage. In 1641, they did it again. Well, they would promise reform, and then they would go back to debasement, of course, when the money ran out. Now, that destroyed what little confidence was left in the money. But again, the pattern here is undeniable. The gold and the silver doubled in value compared to the wages that could buy it. The elites protected themselves by holding hard assets, but the middle class and the poor, they were wiped out by inflation and currency collapse. And of course, what happened next? Well, Spain lost its dominance. The Dutch and the British rose up. They took over global leadership. Once again, just like Rome, the doubling of gold and silver wasn't a sign of prosperity. It was the signal that the empire was finished. All right, now let's move forward to France, because the pattern again shows up, same thing, and this is right before the French Revolution. By the late 1700s, France was already drowning in debt, of course. The monarchy had spent far beyond its means. They were fighting wars like the Seven Years' War and even funding the American Revolution. By the 1780s, the state was effectively bankrupt, right? They couldn't raise taxes fast enough, so they turned to a new experiment in paper money. By 1789, the revolutionary government began issuing what they called assignats. Now, at first, they were supposed to be backed by this confiscated church land that they had. That sounded solid on paper, but of course, once the printing press started rolling, there was no break, right? There was no stopping them. By 1795, in just 6 years, the French had issued over 45 billion worth of these assignats. Now, the currency literally collapsed in value. Just to put this into perspective, when the assignats were introduced in 1790, one gold louis d'or was worth about 15 livres. By 1795, that same gold coin was worth about 600 livres. Now, that's a 40-fold collapse of the paper currency in just a few years. In other words, gold more than doubled. Then it doubled again and again. And of course, at this point, the money was worthless. And just like with Rome and just like with Spain, the consequences were catastrophic. Hyperinflation came, destroyed the savings of the middle class. Wages lagged for years and years and years. Bread riots broke out all across Paris. People literally couldn't afford food. Confidence in money and the government completely evaporated, and the political fallout was immediate. The revolution turned violent. The Reign of Terror saw tens of thousands executed, including the king and queen themselves. Now, the entire social and political order collapsed, and France spiraled into chaos before Napoleon eventually seized power. Again, the pattern can't be more clear. When gold doubled, and in this case, against the assignats, it wasn't prosperity, right? It was the market screaming that the system was breaking down. And just like before, it ended with the collapse of an empire and the rise of a new order. All right, next up is Britain. By the 1800s, the British pound sterling was the world's reserve currency and was backed by gold. London at the time was the center of global finance. But like every empire before it, war and debt started to break the system apart. In World War I, Britain suspended the gold standard in 1914 to print more money for the war. They tried to go back to the gold standard in the 1920s, but confidence never came back. By the end of World War II, Britain was financially exhausted. They were dependent on U.S. loans, and the pound was under massive pressure. Then came the breaking point. In September 1949, Britain devalued the pound by about 30% overnight, from $4.03 down to $2.80. All right, that's how fast confidence in a reserve currency can collapse. and the effect was immediate. In sterling terms, gold doubled in value. Even Parliament admitted it at this time. In a 1949 debate, one member said, quote, "Because the government have been obliged to devalue the pound, thus increasing the value of gold, instead of the increased value going to the benefit of the state, the money has gone into private pockets," end quote. Now, in other words, those holding gold got richer overnight, while ordinary citizens were left holding weaker money. But this wasn't just a one-off. Britain went from one sterling crisis to another through the 50s into the 60s, and each time confidence eroded, gold in pound terms kept rising. By 1967, another devaluation triggered international panic that even helped break the London gold pool, which was the last attempt to keep gold fixed. And the bigger picture here is that Britain's devaluation signaled the end of the pound's reign as the global reserve. At Bretton Woods in 1944, the dollar replaced the pound as the anchor as the world's monetary system. And once again, just like Rome, Spain, and France, when gold doubled against the currency, it marked the collapse of the empire's financial dominance. The torch had passed, this time to the U.S. dollar. Okay, now, here's where the story shifts to America, all right? This is where the blueprint that we've been seeing, where it starts to take a dangerous turn. Now, after World War II, the world needed a new monetary order. So, the world got together at Bretton Woods in 1944. The U.S. made a deal. The dollar would be pegged to gold at $35 per ounce, and every other major currency would peg to the dollar. Now, in theory, this made the dollar the world's reserve money while still providing stability. And of course, it also meant that the U.S. had to back all those dollars, or at least pretend to. Now, in the beginning, it sort of, kind of, more or less worked. By the 1960s, the cracks began to stretch wide. The U.S. was running trade and budget deficits, printing more dollars than they had the gold to back it up. Now, of course, other nations began redeeming dollars for gold. They understood what was going on, and this put the pressure on the U.S. gold reserves, and it became unbearable. Now, to defend the system, in 1961, several nations, they formed what was called the London Gold Pool. It was basically eight central banks literally pooling their gold reserves together to keep the gold price pinned to $35 an ounce. And it worked for a while, but in March of 1968, the pool collapsed. Right? The system switched to a two-tier gold market. There was an official, like a central bank rate, and that was at $35. But the private market, well, the private market was free to float. Right? That divergence was a warning sign. Then came August 15th, 1971, and this was the crucial moment. President Richard Nixon announced that the U.S. would no longer allow foreign central banks to convert dollars into gold. He literally closed the gold window, right? Now, that move severed the most critical link in the Bretton Woods design. At the same time, Nixon slapped a 10% surcharge on all imports, think tariffs. This was a blunt tool, and it was used to pressure other nations to revalue their currencies and to protect the U.S. dollar. But of course, at that point, confidence was gone. By 1973, the price of gold had doubled from $35 to $68. And just like that, the Bretton Woods system, the global system, was done. So here's the pattern. Again, gold was pegged. Then a currency had to break for the system to survive. Gold doubled, then quadrupled, quintupled. The doubling moment was the canary in the coal mine here. And just like Rome and Spain and France and Britain, the doubling in dollar terms signaled the beginning of the end of an era. All right, and that brings us to right here today. And here's where things start to get serious, because just like Rome and Spain, just like France, just like Britain, gold's doubled again. In just the last 2 years, gold priced in U.S. dollars has gone from around $2,000 an ounce to now today over $4,000 an ounce. And that's not just a nice little rally, right? This is the exact same signal that we've seen at the end of every single empire's run. Now, what most people look at, they see that chart and they think, wow, gold must be going up, right? But just like with Rome's denarius or Spain's vayan, that's not really what's happening, okay? Gold doesn't change. The dollar is changing. Gold is the constant. The dollar, the measuring stick, it's the one that's shrinking. So remember, under Bretton Woods, the dollar was pegged at $35 an ounce, right? Then after Nixon closed the gold window, gold doubled, it tripled, eventually went up to more than 20 times by 1980. Now, every doubling was a flashing red light that confidence in the system was breaking down. And again, here we are, right? Gold has doubled in the reserve currency of our time, the U.S. dollar. So what does that tell us? Well, it tells us that confidence in the dollar system is collapsing. Foreign nations are already reducing their dollar reserves. Central banks are buying record amounts of gold. We We saw that in 2022, 2023, 2024. They're the biggest years of central bank gold purchases, right? These are breaking records. And meanwhile, U.S. debt's been exploding, now past $37 trillion, with a $2 trillion deficit every single year. So, of course, the math doesn't work. And the market is starting to realize this. But yet, for the most part, nobody's really talking about this. Now, when Rome collapsed, everyone knew. When France's money collapsed, there were bread riots literally in the streets. When Britain devalued, of course, it was headline news. But today, with gold doubling, the mainstream media has been pretty silent. Almost, not entirely, because even Wall Street is having to finally admit this. Just about 2 weeks ago, JP Morgan, one of the biggest banks in the world, just put out a report calling this, quote, the debasement trade. They said retail and institutions are piling into gold and Bitcoin to protect against fiat devaluation. So while most people don't see it yet, the biggest players in the financial world are already naming what's happening, right? They're calling it the debasement trade. It's the debasement of the currency. And of course, as I just showed you, history tells us that when gold doubles, that's the sign of the empire in decline. Okay, so gold's doubled. Wall Street's calling it literally the debasement trade. But why does this always have to trigger collapse? Like, what's the engine? What's the mechanism behind it? Let's walk through it real quick. First principle, governments promise more than they can collect, right? So welfare, military, infrastructure, social programs, taxes alone can't keep up with that. So when the revenue falls short, they turn to the central bank, right? That's enter the debt monetization. So now the government has to start issuing debt. The central bank starts to buy it, right? So it's basically printing money, right? That's the modern version of what Rome and Spain did by debasing their coins. Now that newly printed money starts to dilute the purchasing power of existing money. It's invisible theft. So, you know, you hold cash in the bank, but it becomes worth less, right? That's the hidden tax of inflation. The more they print, the more they steal from savers. It's called seniorage in technical terms. It's the profit governments make because they issue money above its cost. And here's what it does. It transfers value from the public to the issuer. And the thing with inflation is it doesn't hit everyone equally. There's something called the Cantillon effect. And this says that new money doesn't spread uniformly. Those closest to the source of printing, so the banks, the bondholders, the governments, the elite institutions, they get the money first. And then they can use that money to buy hard assets. And by the time some of that money trickles down to you, prices have already moved. You end up paying more for the same things they got at cheaper. On top of that, inflation redistributes wealth from creditors to debtors. So that means if you had lent out money like decades ago, inflation erodes the real return. Of course, on the other side, if you owe money, inflation helps you out. Now, if you lent money decades ago, inflation erodes those real returns. Of course, on the other side, if you owe money, inflation helps you because you get a repay with weaker dollars. So the steps are, one, government overspends by issuing debt. Number two, central bank prints more money. That's the debt monetization part. Three, money supply inflates and the currency weakens. Number four, we get existing savers, they lose, but the debtors gain. Five, elites use this new money to acquire gold and land and Bitcoin. These are the hard assets they need to survive. And then finally, confidence collapses. This is when the system breaks down. All right, now that's the engine, that's the mechanism. That's why gold doubling is more than a signal. It's part of the mechanism. And by the way, even JP Morgan sees this, right? They frame gold and Bitcoin together under this debasement trade logic, meaning institutions already know the mechanism is running. So basically, to summarize all this, the monetary system always fails when the printing press becomes the default funding tool. And gold doubling, that's the canary in the coal mine, right? That's the tipping point. Okay, so now let's look at how this mechanism translates into an absolute wealth transfer, and more importantly, how you can be positioned to be on the right side of it, right? So the question that you should be asking right now is, how do we get on the receiving end of the wealth transfer and not on the losing end? All right, well, if we look back at the historical patterns, Rome, Spain, France, etc., we can see that the insiders, the elites, the people closest to the money printers, they move their wealth into hard assets before the collapse, right? Land, commodities, gold, and they do this to protect themselves. Meanwhile, the middle class, the savers, the people holding the currency, they're the ones that get wiped out, right? Rome's citizens, Spain's farmers, France's shopkeepers, Britain's workers, they all paid the price. That's exactly what's happening right now. Gold's doubled. The insiders see it. Central banks have been buying records amount of gold, more than any time in modern history. Wall Street's starting to catch on, right? JP Morgan literally calling it the debasement trade. They said investors are piling into gold and Bitcoin to protect against currency collapse. And they even projected a Bitcoin price. They said Bitcoin could reach $165,000 simply by just matching gold on a volatility adjusted basis. I mean, think about that. The same banks that dismissed Bitcoin for over a decade, they're now openly admitting it could outperform gold. All right, so what's the playbook here? Well, there's a two-prong playbook. First, defense. Let's play defense first. Gold is the insurance, right? Gold's been money for 5,000 years. It's the bedrock. It's preserved wealth through, you know, every empire collapse throughout history. Gold doesn't really make you rich, but it keeps you from being wiped out. All right, then comes offense. That's the second part. And for that, we have Bitcoin. Now, if gold is the shield, Bitcoin's more like the sword. It's not just another asset. It's a brand new open source monetary technology. And it's being adopted globally faster than any other asset in history, right? This is the asymmetric opportunity of our lifetime. Gold doubled, it preserved wealth, that's great. But Bitcoin can multiply it. So you can either watch history repeat and be on the losing side of the transfer, or you can front run it, right? You can protect yourself with gold, or you can grow your wealth with Bitcoin, just like the insiders are doing right now. That's the blueprint. When gold doubles, empires collapse. It just happened again. And now for the first time, we don't have to just survive it. We can actually use it to build generational wealth. All right, so just to put this home, let's just recap real quick, right? We've seen the pattern through 2,000 years of history. Rome debased the denarius, gold doubled. Spain flooded itself with silver, gold doubled. France printed assignats, gold doubled. Britain devalued the sterling, gold doubled. Bretton Woods, Nixon closed the gold window, gold doubled. And now today, gold just doubled again in the US dollar. The signal couldn't be more clear. So again, choose which side you want to be on. And I just want to say, this is not about fear, right? This is not about doom and gloom. It's just about seeing the signs and knowing what comes next so we can adjust our strategies. Because every collapse creates opportunities for those who see the blueprint. Now, if you want to see exactly what my price targets are for Bitcoin and gold in 2030, 2040, and 2050, you should probably watch this video right here. And I'll see you over there.